We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not.
No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Just look at that, he hit the fucking ball. Guy gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast, thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the sports movie podcast, brought to you by Blue Wire Podcast. I am your host, Kyle Banduho. A little bit of quick housekeeping before we get into today's episode. As you folks know, we have been covering Ted Lasso on the show for the past few months. Those rewatches come at you every Thursday now. Me and Alex McDaniel breaking down season 2. We'll be hitting you on this Thursday with a special guest breaking down episode 5, Rainbow, which was just stunning. Big thanks to everyone who is checking out those recaps. And then on Mondays, getting back into, for a lot of it, getting back into the sports movies, what this podcast was originally founded on, and putting a lot of those choices back into the hands of our patrons at the Big Screen Sports Patreon. Shout out to our producer patrons. That is Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Christine, and Kevin Frost. The patrons picked The Longest Yard, which was an episode that me and my buddy J.R. Hickey did last week. Next month, it looks like the patrons are leaning toward the greatest game ever played. There is still time in that vote. And then on this show, once a month, I'll usually do a non-sports movie. And I have put that up to a vote for the patrons as well. I figured, why not let them choose? And right now, that is leaning Almost Famous. So if you have big problems with the greatest game ever played or Almost Famous, you might want to jump in and vote. You can go to patreon.com/bigscreensports to do that. It helps you. You can support the show, which is great. I appreciate everyone who supports the show. Like I said, vote on movies, patron choice topics, AMA questions. You get Discord access, and most importantly, stickers. Everyone loves stickers. Now, for today's episode, like I said, we've been talking a lot of Ted Lasso. It's taken up taking up a lot of this podcast time, taking up a lot of the Twitter timeline. Everyone loves Ted Lasso, and especially today's guest. I have been a fan of his Ted Lasso tweets from afar. He is a writer for the Boston Globe. Huge Ted Lasso fan. It is Chad Finn. Chad, thanks so much for joining Big Screen Sports.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Kyle. We're huge fans of you and Alex on the pod. I always listen to my 14-year-old son who picks up on more of the little subtle things in the show than I do when we're driving around. So it's a pleasure to be on.
Absolutely. Well, we appreciate you listening. And then I definitely want to dive into that. You sharing the show with your son, but before we get going, where can the folks follow you? Check out what you have going on at the Globe.
BostonGlobe.com is a good spot. Boston.com and at Globe Chad Finn on Twitter. I'm the sports media columnist, but I also write about whatever happens to be going on in Boston sports at the moment. And that's usually a lot. So pretty busy and pretty lucky to be covering this scene up here. But frankly, my entire life now revolves around Ted Lasso. So
yeah, we're going to be talking about the Boston Globe in a little bit for something else. But yeah, let's talk Ted Lasso. It's how you and I connected. I think everyone has experienced this show in a different way because of, frankly, how few people have Apple Plus comparatively to the, you know, the big streamers like Netflix or even shows on HBO. And when you think about shows on HBO, especially now, it's so miniseries centric. It's like Mayor of Easttown was big a few months ago, and that was something that, you know, you kind of caught wind of, you catch it every Sunday, and then, you know, and then it's over. And with Ted Lasso, over the past year, it had this, you had people like my co-host Alex, who watched it from the get-go, watched it week by week, spaced out, did that whole thing. You had people like me who got on way later, binged it right away the first time, and then now I'm doing the week by week thing. How did you first experience the show?
Yeah, well, it's funny because I, as a media writer, I subscribe to a lot of streaming services and then, you know, get reimbursed on what I can if I remember. But generally in our household, we subscribe to what my wife wants. And she wanted Apple Plus, I think, for Chernobyl when that came out. Was that HBO?
Love Chernobyl. Yeah. That was HBO, but yeah, I love Chernobyl.
I can't keep them all straight, but we got it for something. And I said, all right, I see these people tweeting about Ted Lasso all the time, and they tended to be the same people who are tweeting about Schitt's Creek, which we absolutely loved and kind of has the same tone to it, you know, made you feel pretty good about things and at a time when a lot of people weren't feeling great about things. And so we started watching that, and it was people like Alex, Nicole Auerbach, the National Sports Writer of the Year, who covers, everybody knows, some college football and basketball. She was a big tweeter of that, and I used to work with her at the Globe. So I respected their opinion on this and gave it a shot. And I think from the beginning, it exceeded what you expect, because part of it, you go into it thinking, okay, it's going to be similar to those promos that NBC ran where it was, you know, Sudeikis, the character Sudeikis was basically playing a Saturday Night Live character in the promos. And you realize right away, probably from his first press conference in the first episode, that it's going to be a lot deeper than this and the characters are going to be a lot more developed. So I followed the advice of people like Alex and Nicole on Twitter, and then fell in love with it right away once we started watching. And so we, you know, we came to the podcast because we started looking around and say, all right, is anybody talking about this? And Alex and you were promoting it on Twitter. So that's kind of how we came to find it. And I think we've watched the show on repeat probably more than any other show we've ever watched, other than maybe The Office, which was on an endless loop in my house for the first 6 months of the pandemic. But otherwise, I don't think it's being hyperbolic to say this is probably my favorite show I've ever watched.
It's incredible. And like The Office it was on Netflix forever, and it was The Office you can throw on pretty passively. This is a show that I have found I can't throw it on passively. I always dial in. It's like, because with this show and every episode, it seems like there's no wasted moments. Have you been able to throw this on passively, or is it something that when you throw it on, you're pretty dialed in every time?
No, you can't. And that's why it's so rewatchable, because you always pick up on little things along the way. And the other funny part that I kind of realized recently is that you miss things because they're British. You know, it's just, they'll say a little one-liner, and if you don't have the closed captioning on sometimes, or you're just looking, you know, at your phone or something when you're watching the show and trying to do those two things, you'll miss things, and you pick up on them on that second, third, or fourth rewatch. I was watching Rainbow again this morning, and there were three or four lines, just little things Keeley said under her breath, or Rebecca, or anybody that I didn't pick up on before. I think the character I probably focus most on when he's saying something is Roy, because every single thing is hilarious. But a big reason why it's so rewatchable is because there are always little elements that you miss the first time.
And we were talking before we started recording that this is a show that you are watching with your 14-year-old son and sharing that with him. And I have kind of lamented, my wife and I both, that our son is 7, almost 8, probably still a little too young to get Ted Lasso. But this is a show that I can't wait to share with him, because one, I think it's going to age wonderfully.
Yeah.
And it's such a good show about human connection and interaction. I mean, this is something we have beat to death on these recaps, and it's a big example of like how to talk to people and how to be emotionally available and also just connect with people. What has that been like, sharing that father to son and that experience?
Yeah, I think there are two things he takes away with it from it, just from our discussions. And it's that kindness is rewarding, that it comes back to you. If you treat somebody else with respect and warmth and consideration, that multiplies and it will be something that benefits you as well. And the other thing I think he's learned is that F-bombs are okay if they're funny. I don't know if we would have allowed him to watch, a show where a character actually swears so much and around children like Roy does, but it's hilarious and it comes from a really good place and has a lot of heart behind everything he says. And so we kind of get past that point of parenting where we're like, you know what, he's 14. He actually just turned 15 this week. He's ready for this and he can handle it. He's not going to go to school and swear at his teacher or anything like that. So despite some occasionally adult-oriented content, a great thing to watch with a teenage kid.
Yeah. I mean, I'm very much looking forward to experiencing this with my son because I think it's going to be around for a long time. I think kind of like The Office in that this will live on. This is a show that future generations, I would like to think, will, you know, because like I was too young for Seinfeld, but it's still something that you can come back to and you can plug right in. And like this still makes sense. It's still funny. It's still, you know, great. With you personally, I think certain people are pulling different things that really resonate with them with this show, certain characters, certain, you know, plot lines or anything like that. Is there anything about this show that you have pulled? Like me, for instance, I was a single dad for a while and
yeah.
What Ted's going through now and being distanced and stuff like that. I think there's always something different for people. And like even what Roy is going through now, trying to figure out a new chapter in your life. I think anyone who has played sports or done any sort of thing like Roy, where you put a lot of your life into it and suddenly it's gone, has tried to figure that out. Are there any specific themes in this show that have really pulled it out of you?
Well, a really unexpected one. It's just sort of the, I guess the evolution of Ted, where you think he's going to be a jokey character and, you know, he kind of is the center of it. All the other characters play off him. But you realize as it goes on, this is even in season one, toward the end of season one and well into season two, that it's okay not to be okay. And that if you can acknowledge that and reach out for help and talk to people about what you're feeling, that's a pathway to getting better. It should be a pathway to getting better. And you don't expect that kind of thing from a show that evolved out of a soccer promo for NBC. You know, it's full of surprises. The character development is not ever predictable. I mean, you go back to episode one, I think it was, when Keeley's introduced, she walks into the locker room and your immediate assumption is, okay, girlfriend of a player, she's probably not all that bright. She's probably on Instagram all the time. Her identity is going to be tied to her relationship with Jamie at the time. And it's none of that. She's one of the brightest characters on the show. She's as thoughtful and considerate of everybody else as Ted is. And it's just those constant revelations with the show, the depth of the characters. It makes you think that, I don't know if this is true, maybe you and Alex have found this out along the way, but it feels like everything was planned out before they ever filmed anything. And not season one, the entire show. I feel like they know what the final episode of season three is going to be and how it's going to go and what ultimately happens with Ted, because it just it constantly surprises you and in an extraordinary kind of way.
The whole show is so deliberate. Everything, you're exactly. I mean, everything is planned out, and that goes into my next point. So you mentioned The Office recently. Game of Thrones as well comes to mind as shows that, as it was time to wrap things up, didn't. Not what you want. I always argue that the Office started at peak performance and steadily kind of got worse. I argue that Parks and Rec started off really bumpy and steadily got better. Actually,
season one,
season one of Parks and Rec. I tell people you could skip it if you want.
And different show.
Yeah, you can start on season 2. You can even start on season 3 when Adam Scott and Rob Lowe show up, and you'll still enjoy it and appreciate it. And I think that show kind of steadily, maybe not steadily, gets better. I think there's a peak, but with this one, do you have any doubts in their ability to kind of land this plane? Because it does seem it's already a predetermined 3 seasons. Apparently, they have everything planned out. I had no confidence in like Game of Thrones. I just none. I think, and I was still let down. But even after the season, the second to last season, it was like, I really don't know. And this one, I feel I might be setting myself up for failure, but I don't have a single doubt that they are going to land this plane smoothly.
Yeah, I think you got to trust the process, as they say in Philadelphia. It's funny you cited a couple of Mike Schur shows, because I'm completely with you. I think Parks and Rec had a higher career batting average than The Office, mm-hmm. because The Office was phenomenal for the first 3 seasons. The Jim and Pam storyline, the Michael character, anything you wanted. And it felt like, especially after Carell left in season 6, that they're kind of winging it week to week and weren't sure who the center character was going to be. And Carell's irreplaceable, but you could go back and say maybe they should have just stopped then, but they were just making so much money.
To tie Parks it back to Boston, The Office had a lot of Nomar in it.
A lot of Nomar. Nomar's my guy, so.
I love Nomar. Nomar is I distinctly remember, it's the first player ever, this is just a little flex by me, that I did an accurate bomb card, that I saw him come up.
Oh, nice.
Home run. And he hit it. And he hit it in, back when they had the net above the monster. He did it in like center field. So my first ever bomb card. Love Nomar, but the end came quick for Nomar. And it kind of did the same thing for The Office.
Yeah, it did. That's a great analogy, and I'm going to steal that down the road, because another one of my Twitter shticks is arguing that Nomar was better than Jeter with the 96 to 2002 in parentheses. There is the disclaimer.
You're not wrong at all. Thank
you, Kyle. But yeah, that's a great analogy. But yeah, back to the Mike Schur aspect of it, The Good Place had a set finite amount of time that they were going to run, because he knew that storyline could not go on forever, where it started getting repetitive, where viewers would start get frustrated, where that the characters were just sort of in this endless loop, and the plots would get crazier and crazier, and it was hard enough to believe the concept as it was, but I think it was really wise to put a cap on that show when they did. And you watch Ted Lasso, and you got to trust the writers, because every single thing they've done so far hasn't met the high expectations of the bar they set previously. But it I feel like it's succeeding. I've seen through episode 8, but episode 5 to me is of season 2 here that just came out Friday morning is the best one I've seen, and I haven't seen the last 4 episodes or 5 episodes of the series season, but I have complete confidence that it's just going to keep getting better and better and more fulfilling for the viewers, because that's all that's happened so far.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Last thing before we veer into a different direction, which Ted Lasso character are you?
Well, in terms of vocabulary, I'm Roy. So, I don't know. That's a good one. I mean, you got to take pieces from all of them, right? Probably. Yeah. I imagine my coworkers would say I'm like Higgins or something like that, which is just mean, but he's a great home life and he seems really happy, and he's built a bond with his boss now after a rocky beginning, so maybe that's it. But to me, the worldview most relatable is Roy, just scowling and swearing under my breath at everybody but secretly caring a lot about them. That's probably most accurate. I think Roy's something to aspire to.
Roy is the one I aspire to. I've got a lot of the language, the frank intimidation factor that he has, I don't really have. I unfortunately have a ton of Nate in me, that both Nate and I seem to be trying to work on that a little bit. But yeah, Roy is just a true lord. Let's take a quick ad break and then get back with some Boston movie talk.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, we're back. It is time to shift from Ted Lasso talk, even though I feel like I could talk about Ted Lasso forever. I connected with Chad because of Ted Lasso, but Chad also writes for the Boston Globe, and Boston itself, the city, lends itself to a particular set of movies. There's a lot of great, I wouldn't say a lot of great Boston movies. There's a select, like a Rushmore of Boston movies, I would say. I was doing back some thinking, and I listed, I could rip off my first four top Boston movies up like right away. It takes me 2 seconds. I'm just like this, and this. And then it kind of pans out. So I wanted to, from a guy who works for the Boston Globe, lives in Boston, I wanted to get that perspective. Is there an easy top Boston movie for you?
Yes, but it was one I forgot. Much to my chagrin, until I started thinking about it a little bit more this morning. But it's got to be Spotlight, because
it's just the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's about the place I work at. It's about people I worked with, and some of it was shot at the Globe, so it's familiar areas. So sentimentally, I mean, we're not in that building anymore. We moved to a different building downtown. So sentimentally, it's got to be it. But I mean, one Best Picture. You know, it's kind of it's obviously a very dark topic, but it's also sort of reassuring for people in journalism anyway, that you can get the story and get through people who are trying to obstruct you if you put the work in and are determined and dedicated. So that would be number one for me, and probably a tie for number two is all the other movies that are very dark, but have Globe delivery trucks in the background. They seem to show up in every single movie, The Departed and The Town, and the Boston Globe newspaper delivery truck seems to be a staple of background work in all the movies. So maybe it should get some sort of nomination for its background work in all these movies through the years.
Yeah, it does. It's like there are the certain staples in all these movies that get mentioned. Fenway Park gets brought up a lot. Obviously, The Town has has the ultimate Fenway moment, you would say. Not going to spoil it for anyone who for some reason hasn't seen The Town. But I go back to Spotlight. I have bought maybe 3 DVDs in the past 5-6 years. you know, and I used to love my DVDs, love my Blu-rays. I bought Spotlight on DVD because I could not risk that movie for some reason if it gets taken off all streaming services, or because right now it's on Netflix. It's something I love throwing on. I watched Spotlight the day of my wedding. I was at home alone for a little bit, and I was like, I need something to make me feel good. Let me turn on this movie about uncovering an abuse scandal in the Catholic Church. But it makes me feel good, but I have it on DVD. So just in case maybe all the streamers crash, I'll still have it. I can still watch Spotlight. I'm continually blown away by how rewatchable that movie is. Again, despite the content, it moves so quickly. And it's just someone who was in there. It seems like, I mean, I have never been to Boston. It seems like it is very ingrained in the city and feels very authentic.
Yes, absolutely. The scenes, you know, walking around the city where they're out doing their legwork as reporters, some of it is obvious stuff, landmark type of stuff, and other things are areas where you only know if you live here, which really appeals to the people of Boston. To me, though, the probably the the authenticity of the Globe itself and the newspaper itself in the movie just, it blows me away. Like a lot of their homework, the reporter's homework, is done going down to the Globe Library and just going through old newspaper clippings and files and talking to the librarian. I think they actually used our real librarian in that scene. And that was like my favorite place to go, just when I had an hour to kill, when I would be in the office, just to look up the photo archive of the 1978 Red Sox. Or I remember a few years ago, I did a project on the top 50 prospects in Red Sox history in the draft era. It's like the 50th anniversary of the draft. And I found a photo of every single guy in our library who was a prospect, including guys who, you know, hit like 380 in single A and then didn't get out of double A, but they would have been really highly thought of at the time. And you know, that's the institutional knowledge kind of stuff that you just can't replicate with the internet. And like I said, we're not in that building anymore, and a lot of that stuff is gone. And so watching that movie again, despite, you know, what the topic is, it's almost kind of like comfort food in a way. And that'll always, no matter what other Boston movies they make, and I think there are a lot of good ones already, that one's a pretty easy number one for me.
Yeah, I go back to that one. The Departed and The Town, I always flip-flop. It depends on kind of what I'm in the mood for. I lean The Departed, although I will lean the last set piece from The Town. Again, we mentioned Fenway Park. That is a very, that's thrilling. I think that thrill-wise, I think it outdoes anything The Departed does. But when you go back to the cast, I'm a huge Departed fan, but I have to ask, between The Town, The Departed, any other Boston movies, is there a standout, wow, that accent is bad? I know Jack Nicholson gets a lot of shots fired his way. Is he the ultimate, what the hell are you doing, man, accent?
Nah, Sheen is worse in that movie. I think Martin Sheen's the worst one, and Baldwin's not great. And you know what's funny is Damon and Wahlberg aren't that great either. They both kind of overdid it a little bit. Damon naturally talks that way.
Yeah.
I guess Wahlberg does too. He not quite to the degree that he did when he was Marky Mark. But yeah, there's some of those are just so bad. And I think it goes with any accent, any dialect you're trying to nail in any movie. If you can't get it close to right, just don't bother. Just kind of talk in your normal way. And The Town The Departed probably had the record for the most bad ones. And I think the best one, not surprisingly, was probably Affleck in Good Will Hunting. Just, you know, that movie, which probably would be number two, and the argument for number two for me, Affleck and Damon in that movie really captured what it was kind of like to be sort of a young, aimless Boston kid trying to figure out where you're going to go with your life.
Yeah, the scene at the construction site when he talks about the best moment of his day, walking out, just incredible. You feel like you are dialed into, these dudes are actually from right here.
Oh, come on. Why is it always this? I mean, I fucking owe it to myself to do this or that. What if I don't want to?
No. Well, fuck you. You don't owe it to yourself. You owe it to me. Because tomorrow I'm going to wake up and I'll be 50. And I'll still be doing this shit. That's all right. That's fine. I mean, you're sitting on a winning lottery ticket. You're too much of a pussy to cash it in. And that's bullshit. Because I'd do fucking anything to have what you got. So would any of these fucking guys. It'd be an insult to us if you're still here in 20 years. Hanging around here is a fucking waste of your time.
Yeah, I think that was real. You know, I think that's how, I mean, you know, Damon went to Harvard and Affleck went to Vermont for a little bit before going out to Hollywood. And obviously they were bright guys and, you know, weren't robbing banks in the South End or anything like that. But those certainly seemed like experiences they actually lived through. Casey Affleck there. I meet a person every day who was like Casey Affleck's character in that movie. So those guys knew the terrain with that one.
The SNL skit, it's not a skit, it's one of like the film things, but is Casey Affleck as the Dunkin' Donuts. I watch it like once a month, and it makes me howl every single time I watch it.
Yeah, that was one of their best skits in years. And you know, the best jokes are the ones that are probably what 99.9% accurate, and that one was that one hit home
for a lot of people.
Yeah, comedy is funny when there's authenticity behind it. I want to leave you with, we've got to talk about a sports movie before we get out of here, and this is one that I think catches a ton of flack from people in Boston, people in general. Very, I would say, guilty pleasure of mine. Although, you know, there is that thinking of pleasure should never be considered guilty pleasures, but it's a movie that is objectively not great. But you gotta from a Boston guy, a guy who writes about the Red Sox. Tell me what your reaction to Fever Pitch the first time you saw it.
I got Roy Kent's vocabulary running through my head again. First of all, the best Boston movie is the 2004 World Series documentary. I think we all know that. But just the fact that Fallon, who sucks, who ruined every skit he tried to ruin every skit he was in on Saturday Night Live, and Drew Barrymore, who, all right, she's cool, fine. They got to go on the field when the Red Sox won the World Series. They're climbing over the fence in center field, and that moment Red Sox fans have been waiting for their entire lives. And you know, it'd be cool if, you know, Fallon was actually a Red Sox fan. I think he's kind of a quasi Mets fan, if I remember heard at the time, but he doesn't seem like much of a baseball guy anyway. But yeah, that movie it had some nice touches. I remember there was a scene where Fallon's character is going through his closet, and it's like these retro t-shirts of like George Scott, Jim Rice, Fred Lynn, Butch Hobson. No, that's a nice touch. You can tell that the Farrelly brothers and the people who wrote that movie were really Red Sox fans, but they did Red Sox fans no justice with the casting in that movie. And, you know, the book Fever Pitch and the soccer version of it's phenomenal, Nick Hornsby's book, but that is not a good replica of it at all.
No, I mean, the movie could say Fallon and Barrymore have good chemistry. You could argue there was probably a lane for Fallon to put together a couple more like so-so rom-coms before he got the Tonight Show gig and kind of shifted his career. But it would have been interesting to see what it was like with, I mean, you're not getting Matt Damon to do that movie, but like an actual, like a Boston guy who, yeah, if you get like, what was Casey, although thinking about Casey Affleck in a rom-com is tough.
It's the first name I thought of. Yeah, that's the first one I thought of too.
Yeah, that'd be, kind of interesting to see him in that. But yeah, someone not Fallon and like two actual, and I mean, Barrymore's character was so oblivious to baseball despite living in Boston. Just like come on. But I think I covered it on the podcast earlier this year, and I think I gave it an all-star just because it's one of those ones, like it's on TV all the time. It's, you know, I like the chemistry. It's, if I lived in Boston, I would probably feel differently. But Chad, this was great. I appreciate you giving me the chance to talk about Ted Lasso and Spotlight on the same podcast. That is a dream for me. Tell the folks where they can follow you, check out your work.
Yeah, bostonglobe.com. And I'm always on Twitter tweeting about nothing related to my job. And then like I probably should. So, yeah, I'm at Globe Chadfin on Twitter, and a lot of fun talking to you, man. I love the pod, and looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say about episode 5, because I've decided it is my number one. It's some of my favorites. So can't wait to hear what you guys have to say.
That's a decision I'm going to have to make in the next few days. Am I going to come out and stake that flag? But yeah, everyone follow Chad for some Ted Lasso takes. If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate, leave a review on Apple Podcasts. Tell me what you think about the Ted Lasso rewatch. Again, on Thursday, covering episode 5 of season 2 of Ted Lasso, Rainbow. It's me, Alex McDaniel, and a very special guest. And then we'll catch you again next Monday. Thanks for listening.